the big leagues are a big deal. This is Baseball Central with Jeff Blair and Kevin Barker on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
And a pretty significant crouch from the left side. He swings and bounces it back the mound off the bare hand of Kelly, and it'll be Seager getting it and firing it on to first. Kelly looks like he's all right, but a big smile on his face. 1-6-3 on the game-ending putout, and the Dodgers behind a great performance from Clayton Kershaw, another home run from Cody Bellinger, and then they pour it on in the middle innings, and they win game one 8-3.
Okay, if you're in your car right now, you know, I mean, keep your eyes on the road, obviously, right, Barker? You know, you can keep your eyes on the road. But if you see a guy, I don't know, who's about 6 feet, 200 pounds, salt and pepper hair, he may be wearing, and you know, we don't know, he may be wearing a blue surgical mask. We're not certain about that. He may be wearing a blue surgical mask. But if you do see that gentleman at any point, can you please call the Tampa Bay Rays and tell them you found their missing manager? Barker, what the hell was up with Kevin Cash last night? He's 6 feet, 200. What the hell was up? Did someone kidnap him? Was he jumping and Derek Fisher was going to catch him and he missed him? Ooh. Like, what happened to Kevin Cash? Did he have a brain freeze?
No. Overused bullpen and first game of the World Series.
Come on. I mean, you were the guy that was telling me. You were the guy that was telling me all along that one of the real strengths, yeah, one of the real strengths of the Rays was that Cash knows how to do all this funky, junky stuff, right?
I was the one.
You were the one. And that, you know, Dave Roberts, boy, he was going to have to step out of his comfort zone in order to manage in this situation. And so, why would you what was he seeing in Tyler Glasnow that we didn't see? Kevin Cash.
Exactly what I just said.
The bullpen, they had days off. They're rested.
Well, they're rested today. I was a little worried about you last night.
I didn't
get a text from you.
Well, no, because
Shut up.
I admit that I turned off the TV. I turned off the TV set. I watched the trial of the Chicago 7.
Oh, you weren't confident in your team?
Oh,
offense to come back?
Man, piling on. Listen, I saw enough of Mookie Betts. I'm ready to just, let's stop the series now and let's start free agency.
Yeah, hot bets is the difference between a Dodger sweep and
holy cow,
and this thing going seven. Yeah, I'm with you.
All kidding aside about the fact Kevin Cash is the worst manager in the history of baseball, let's leave that aside for a second.
I'm assuming there's things we didn't know about his team.
Dude, Tyler Glasnow throws real hard. He has to find a third pitch, doesn't he? Yes, I mean, the fastball curve, that's nice. That's pretty. He needs a change of pace.
Those two pitches will get him through a regular season. They're not going to get him through a playoffs. The teams in the playoffs know how to not swing at a breaking ball that starts as a strike and ends up as a ball. And, you know, when he's not efficient enough with the fastball, he can't go middle away with it. That's where he wants to go. He wants to go middle away with most hitters. Lefties, he'll go middle away. Righties, he'll go middle away. If he's not locating that somewhat, he didn't have to because how hard he throws it, but somewhat located, that will make, you know, hitters have to chase a little bit with the breaking ball because they have to cheat to hit the hitter. But I'm with you. Look, if he can ever figure out how to take the sting out of a bat. Mm. Now, not always try and throw it through a bat. Just take the sting out of it. You're talking elite. But, you know, again, it's the Dodgers. The Dodgers lineup, what they bring. You know, I said it about the Betts thing. When he's hot, they will sweep the Rays. I'm saying it right now. If he stays hot and does what he did last night and sets the tone the way he did and gets on base and steals bases and can score from third on a ground ball to first, you will not be happy at the end of this.
Well, look, I'll say this right now. The Rays don't win tonight. We're setting up for a sweep.
Yeah. It's more about
maybe get five, but if the Rays don't win tonight, they're not They're not rattling off four in a row.
Yeah, the Charlie Morton start, I'll give him that, because he's pretty good, and this time of the year he really knows what he's doing. For some reason or the other, the stuff ticks up a notch. We've seen it. 96, 97 instead of 93, 94 is a big deal this time of the year. But it's – look, offensively, they're a better team. I've been telling you this all year, and you never want to listen to me.
I do.
Offensively, and Brandon Lau.
Well, we got to
– Look, six for 56.
Carlos Pena is with the MLB Network, former Tampa Bay Ray. He was actually in the 2018, joins us on Baseball Central. Carlos, thanks for doing this. I know you got to scoot to pick up your kids in a few minutes here, so we'll take advantage of this. Hey, man, we all been there. Some of us are still there. Some of us have been there, though. I'll just throw this out to you. Brandon Lau, what are you seeing or not seeing?
Goodness, you know, it's one of those things that we know what he's capable of doing, guys. We have seen him be successful, but, boy, he just seems like his timing is off. And when you are not on time to hit, I don't care how good your swing is or how much you work on it in the cage. I was guilty of that, you know, working on all the mechanical issues that I thought I had, when in reality the key is always going to be timing. We go there first. You know, usually the mechanics are just symptoms of us not being on time to hit. And I see that he is totally off as far as that's concerned. I mean, he's getting fastballs that are out over the plate, and he is reasonably late and engaging the speed of pitches later than they truly are. I mean, we all do that to an extent. Now that I get to study this stuff a little bit more closely. But he's late. He's late on everything. And those pitches, the pitches that he could hit, he's fouling them off or swinging and missing and just not making solid contact. But it is timing. Timing is the key here.
Yeah, you know, they always say knuckleball guys will throw your timing off. I know I faced a couple of them when I tried to play, and they would always throw you off. You know, when do you start attacking it? When do you start your swing mechanically, you know, from the ground up, that knuckleball? You just don't see it all the time. But October the 5th, game one of the ALDS, he faces Gerrit Cole. Gerrit Cole's thinking, okay, the best hitter on that team is Brandon Lau. I have to figure out a way to attack him. I saw, for me, hard in and elevated hard fastballs. Ever since then, you've seen the glide and the trying to jump out and hit the heater. You know, 6 for 56 in the playoffs doesn't lie. If you're Kevin Cash, you know, he's trying to put him in front of a really good hitter in Randy Superman, you know, to get him better strikes to hit. What do you do with him? I'm assuming they're going to continue to play him. You know, they're not going to show panic and you know, moving him down in the order doesn't change anything. You know, you're still going to get the fastball in and the elevated fastball. So if you're Kevin Cash, what do you do?
You know, I really think that you most definitely want him in the lineup, but we need a solution. So it cannot just be like, well, I hope it clicks today. It cannot be just that. Too much is at stake. And when I look at the entire game and the entire series, I'm baffled as to how pitchers as well as hitters go up there with no particular plan, just kind of hoping that things click. That is unacceptable. So instead of moving him out of the lineup, I think, okay, let's talk about a solution here. You are reasonably late. I mean, if I could make a call right now, I'd be like, you're late. So now we have to figure out a way that you can get on, you know, Gosselin today is going to be throwing gas. Okay. So you have to get ready to hit. So instead of gauging pitches to what you see on the gun and the speed gun, it says 92, you know, it could be as easy, guys. This is what's crazy to me. It could be just as simple as saying, don't look at the 92. You are a few miles per hour late. Instead of 92, let's think of that fastball as 97. It's a 5 miles per hour margin as far as how you get ready for that 97 mile per hour fastball, even though the gun is saying 92. But right now, you know, the gun says 92, but you are at 87 and you're fouling those pitches off. You know what I'm saying? So it could be simple as that, as just pretty much adjusting your sights, adjusting your parameters, your speed gauge, and you add 5 miles per hour to your thought process. And it could be as simple as that. And all of a sudden the swing is like, oh, there's that nice, crisp, beautiful swing.
it was timing. So it could be as simple as that. And now we're not just hoping that your lucky, you know, your lucky sucks work tonight. It's more like, no, I am gauging these beats late. I need to get on time so I can get that clean swing to the baseball and give myself a shot at succeeding.
Carlos, did you see anything with Clayton Kershaw between the first and second inning? The first inning, it looked like, I mean, he threw a lot of pitches that we had Buck Martinez on the international feed, and Buck said, you know, he's throwing some pitches that looked a little non-competitive. It looked like he was having problems.
Yep.
Looked like he was had problems finding his release point. That did not seem to be the case in the second inning. Did you notice any change?
You know, I just think Buck is great, by the way, man. He's got a great eye, and I've worked with him before, and he knows this game, and he's absolutely right. He just did not have the feel for the slider. And if you know, people say, you're a hitter, why are you talking pitching? I'm like, listen, buddy, this is what I did for a living. I'm trying to dissect pitchers pretty much every single night that I'm out there. So if there's one person more qualified to talk about pitchers are hitters. So when I was looking at Kershaw, usually what you can see is that they fly open, and when they fly open, they do not get that bite on the slider, and they also cannot control the fastball. Usually the fastball kind of tails away from their hand, and they have a hard time throwing strikes inside for a hitter, for a left-handed hitter. So if I were facing Kershaw and I see that he's flying open, I know that he cannot throw a fastball in. So as soon as I saw the fastball inside, I would totally eliminate it because he couldn't throw it for a strike.
Mm.
Okay?
Yep.
And then I knew the slider was not going to have the bite. So you could almost sit on a cutter shape. So it's not the hard biting slider, and you would give yourself a chance. But then I thought he was able to close off. He was able to almost use that front shoulder as a hinge. And those are things that are noticeable to a hitter, but more so now that I am sitting at home, you know, analyzing these things a little bit more, I would say closely, because I am far removed emotionally, so I can look at things objectively. And I thought I saw that. I thought I saw that adjustment where he kept his shoulder slightly in a little bit more, and that allowed him to really get the bite on the slider and actually control the fastball. And when he is doing that, he is who he is. We know that it's a Hall of Famer just waiting to happen as soon as he's off the field.
Carlos, good of you to do this, man. Really appreciate your time. Stay safe.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you, guys. Always a pleasure.
Be well. That's Carlos Pena of the MLB Network. And he's right. I mean, look, the first inning, I'm scoring the first inning, and when I see the single and I see a Rosarena, I admit, when a Rosarena walks, I'm going, I'm sitting there watching the game. Yeah. Yes, sir. This is a Clayton Kershaw. I know we're gonna get out of this with a couple. No,
you're thinking about what you're gonna text me and how the pitcher's gonna look,
dude.
And,
I've got you know I'm gonna. And then I see what? Renfro strikes out. Margot grounds out. 1-3.
Yeah.
7, swinging. 7, 6-3, swinging, okay. swinging, 6-3, swinging.
Okay.
I close the book.
See, I'm not a guy that just thinks things happen just because. And it's funny that Carlos mentioned about his front side staying in, his shoulder staying in. There's two pitches that, for me, locked the slider back in. The cutter slider, whatever you want to call it. Sometimes that thing looks like a cutter.
It looks like a
and
cutter.
Sometimes it looks like a slider. I'm assuming it's how he grips the ball, but it just doesn't look like sometimes it slides. Maybe that's because he's not getting on top of it. The finish is not as good. Whatever it is, but you can call it what you want to call it. But it's the breaking ball. the breaking ball that you mentioned, Hunter Renfro, that he struck out on the check swing, that breaking ball, that for me, and the Margot breaking ball that he threw on the ground ball.
That was not a check swing, by the way.
I know. Well,
Laz Diaz did not have a good first couple innings. Anyhow, go ahead.
Anyway,
yeah.
It's the breaking ball that got the shoulder back locked in for me.
Okay.
The two breaking balls that he threw, and then the second inning he showed up, the slider looked like the slider it's looked the whole time in the playoffs. So, again, it's one of those things where you've throw a pitch that grip it and rip it, which is the slider, and then you have a field pitch, which is the breaking ball. Sometimes you need the field pitch, what we're talking about, Glasnow. Yeah. When you don't have a breaking ball, what can you go to get the feel back to where you can feel it going off the tip of your fingers? That's what Kershaw did. He had those two little pitches that locked everything in mechanically again to where it was all directed in the same direction, and now we go off to six innings and one run, and
you know
they're about to sweep the Rays.
The hell? About to sweep the Rays.
Well, they will after the night if they win.
590-590 is a text line, by the way. You can text us right now and you can just tell Barker he's wrong that the Rays are going to win the series, or you can tell me that I'm right when I say that if they lose tonight, c'est fini, it's over.
Huh?
It's funny hearing you talk about Kershaw because one of the lessons that I took from covering Pedro Martinez. And I've got a book where I got all this stuff just scribbled down. Like goes back years. Just stuff that I've been told that I thought was kind of interesting. And Pedro used to talk about how when he was having issues with his control or just wasn't feeling it, he would throw his curve as a way of kind of correcting his mechanics.
There you go. Because it's a field pitch.
Yeah, and Darren Fletch used to talk about the same thing. How Pedro in particular would tell him coming out of the bullpen, you know, let's throw a couple of curves early in the first inning. And I mean, it makes sense, doesn't it? It makes sense that if you're going to sort of self-correct, the starting point in that is getting the right feel of the pitch. And if you get the feel of your breaking pitch like that, it does tend to
Kershaw in the postgame hit said, I was choking off my slider. I was throwing it 42 feet in the first inning. Okay, how do you fix that? It's one thing to say it. It's another thing to know that when I do that, what can I go to get the feel back of it and not do it again? And it was, for me, the curveball. He threw the two curveballs, the Renfro curveball in the check swing and the Margot ground ball to end the inning. The two little slow get me over. Everything has to be right out of his hand when you do that, mechanically from the ground up. You know, you can draw that imaginary rod right up the inside of his back leg. When he lifts his leg, he's like, pitchers are no different than hitters. When you're leaking and you're in a hurry and that front side pulls, all your strength and ability to go directly towards the target is going to be gone.
Yeah, I think the tale of the game, was told about the third inning where, I'm sorry, the fourth inning of the game where, you know, Kershaw is sailing along at that point, and you almost got the sense, I'm looking at the fourth inning here, you know, the walk to Muncy, the 5-3, the home run, then the walk. You almost got the sense that the Rays started seeing the ball a little better in the fourth inning. You know, five of the first six Dodgers hitters, Glasnow got was up to three balls against him.
Yeah.
And then you sort of got the sense that it was less a matter of what he was doing and more a matter of what the Dodgers hitters were doing. Then, of course, you know, once you got him in the stretch for a prolonged period of time.
I was thinking of you, fifth inning. He ends the fifth. What's the score? 2-1. He's thrown 69
pitches. He's 69
pitches. I'm thinking of you. What's the conversation we had yesterday? What did Dave Roberts do when it's 2-1 and he's rolling into the third time through the order? Then they roll out four runs and make it easy on both of them.
We should have been talking about what Kevin Cash does.
Again, there's reasons why he didn't go to his bullpen the way he normally does. Today, he will.
Yeah, and we have to say, and I'm going to, as a sop here to Brian Burke, who always says this, keep in mind that they know more than we know.
There you go.
we can sit there and criticize a guy's decision-making, but keep in mind that we don't know about the health of that bullpen. I think the fact that Jose Alvarado was bounced from the bullpen and they added another left-hander. I mean, managers aren't obligated to tell you that a guy's hurt, but I think, Bark, you may be right. He has more knowledge than we do.
I think he's thinking more about, you know, games 2, 3, 4, and 5 than he is game one.
Probably right.
I mean, it's not like
I hope it works out.
It's not like he doesn't want to go to Anderson, Castillo, Fairbanks, come in, let eat for, you know, 4 or 5 innings. Yep. It's not like he doesn't want to do that.
590-590 is the text line. The great Dan Shulman will join us as well. This is Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. 590-590 is the text line. Text your questions for Kevin Barker. I mean, the longer the series goes on, the more you get a Kevin Barker. That's why you should be cheering for a 9-game series. Want to throw this out, by the way. Good news. We had Mike Soroka on a couple of weeks ago. I mean, I presume this qualifies as good news. And Alex Anthopoulos did his year-end Zoom call, and he was pretty optimistic that Mike Soroka will be, he'll be throwing by the time spring training comes around. He has the Achilles injury. That doesn't mean he's necessarily going to be pitching, but as Alex said, with his work ethic, if he's throwing, it's going to be fine. So that's real good news. He's off crutches. He's off whatever, the walking boot, whatever he had for the Achilles. That's gone. He actually greeted Brian Snitker, the Braves manager, said he walked into his office the day after they were eliminated and greeted him. So that's good news for Mike Soroka.
If he comes back, they're my pick to win it. Not the whole thing, but
yeah,
their division anyway, they might be the team to beat out of the National League. With that pitching, what we saw, and you add Soroka to the mix.
Yeah, I would not disagree.
And you add experience to Ronald Acuna Jr. in the playoffs and that kind of thing. Hey, listen.
I would not disagree with you. And they do have a decision to make in Marcell Ozuna, but they have enough money that they will be able to address that situation. And if I'm Marcell Ozuna, if I'm getting any type of competitive offer from the Braves, I'm taking it because, I guess I could go someplace else and maybe make
give
an extra
three or four million.
Do I give him 3 years?
Yeah.
Ozuna? Yeah. Let me rephrase that. If the DH stays in the National League, yes, I'd give him 3 years. We're going to talk to Dan Shulman in a minute, by the way, because Commissioner Rob Manfred had some interesting stuff to say.
I think he gives the Braves an edge. An edge you can't draft.
What do you mean by?
I think when Josh Donaldson came to Toronto,
he gave
the Blue Jays an edge.
I thought you were talking about a competitor.
Teams were a little afraid to come in and pitch in to that lineup because of JD.
Yeah. No, that's
Marcell adds a little of that with the Braves.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And you can't pitch around Freddie Freeman.
I mentioned 590-590 is a text line. Please include your name and location. Doug in Brantford wants Jock Peterson. He thinks it's somebody that Jay should be interested in. They kind of got enough feast or famine guys, don't they?
You got to ask yourself again. You think the Blue Jays can compete next year in the AL East? Like, legitimately compete? I'm talking about, finish 500. I'm talking about competing with the two big teams. And where are the Red Sox going to be?
Yeah, see, this is – we talked about this. How do you judge? And Mark Shapiro is going to hold a news conference and media availability today, so we'll be on top of it, and we'll and maybe he hasn't answered this, but, I mean, how do you judge that regular season if you're the Blue Jays? It's only 60 games. It's less than half a – it's roughly less than half a regular season. How do you judge that if you're ready to contend in the AL East? Now, that's a fair question. And that has to impact on whether or not you approach a guy like George Springer or Trevor Bauer or somebody like that.
Any of the young guys that were in the bullpen for the Blue Jays in the 60 games make you excited enough that you think you can compete because they'll play a bigger role next year.
Let's bring in Dan Shulman. Mr. Shulman, how are you?
Hi, fellas. How you doing? Long time no talk.
Yeah, we're doing well, man. It was that first game went as we all expected.
How do you mean? I knew you were a big Rays fan.
I've been taking a lot of grief because I think I also said it wouldn't surprise me if that first game wasn't all that close for the Rays. I bought into the Clayton Kershaw narrative, but Danny, it's funny. I'm looking at MLB.
Oh, yeah.
I know. Yeah. What a shock that I would buy into the Clayton Kershaw narrative. But here's the thing, there's an article in MLB.com. Clayton Kershaw hasn't stunk every postseason appearance. He has had some.
Well, the first five innings have been really good.
He's had some stinkers. He's had some average ones, and he's actually had some pretty good ones. What did you see last night? Because I'm watching the first inning, and I told Barker, I thought when a Rosarena walks, I think, okay, now this is set up, man. Kershaw doesn't have his release point. He doesn't look comfortable. And then he gets – the curve gets him seems to get him out of trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah, he figured it out. I mean, he was a little wobbly with his command. His slider hit is his most important pitch. He throws it more than he throws his curveball. Back in the day, curveball was more, but it's slider now more. And he didn't throw. He was bouncing in his slider. He threw three of them in a row to a Rosarena, and he walked them. Then he struck out Hunter Renfroe, who's kind of an out right now. And then he got Margot to ground out. And after that, he was like nails. I mean, he was as good as 2020 Kershaw can be. He's not 2014 Kershaw, but he's as good as 2020 Kershaw can be. And his ERA in the postseason this year now is something like 2.88. And he's walked three guys and struck out 30. Like, I think he gets criticized more when he has a bad one than other people because he set the bar so high. I'm not saying he's always been great in the playoffs. He hasn't. But I think there have been, like Kevin said, you know, the sixth inning's been a problem. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they've pushed him further over the years than they've wanted to. He's been better, I think, than the numbers suggest. And the whole Clayton Kershaw can't do it in the postseason, like I never had any time for that. You know, as I may have said to you, somebody should write a book about sports called, you know, the other guys are trying too. Like, the other guys out there are pretty good. And the only thing I said about this World Series going in is, like, I'm neutral. I call the game, so I don't root for one team or another. But whatever happens, I just want Clayton Kershaw to pitch well because he deserves to have this narrative go away. So I'm happy for him that he pitched well.
Are you surprised how Kevin Cash used Glasnow? Yes, last night.
Yes. Yeah, a little bit. So I've done, you know, obviously saw 10 Rays games during regular season for Sportsnet, and I've been on the American League side for ESPN Radio, so I've done every Rays game in the playoffs, literally. And we all know this is not the usual MO for Kevin Cash. I thought he would have somebody up going to the fifth, which coincided with third time through the order, and I thought it would either be Aaron Loop. You know, you bring in Loop when he can face lefty-righty-lefty, or you bring in a short reliever, a righty like John Curtis, if you can go righty-lefty-righty. The Dodger lineup obviously makes it extremely tough to get favorable matchups the way their lineup is set up. I was surprised that he left him. And then when he went to the pen, I was surprised that he went to Ryan Yarbrough, because that's not really a Ryan Yarbrough situation. You know, you've got your short, get out of, you know, put out the fire guys, and then Yarbrough comes in the next inning and goes three innings, you know, starts the next inning. So, yeah, I had not seen Cash do that once in the playoffs this year, so I was surprised.
Do you think Kevin could do anything with his lineup to, you know, I don't know, fear is a strong word, but, you know, make it a little tougher for Dave Roberts to figure out how to pitch to him? Mix it around, do something different.
I don't know, Kevin. Yeah, you know what? He's tried. Like, he's had Brandon Lau hit first, second, third, fifth, and he even benched him for a game. Maybe benching isn't the right word, but he didn't have him in the lineup for a game. He's had Yandy Diaz first and fourth. He's had, you know, Manuel Margot first, fourth, fifth, seventh. Like, he's moved guys around. They're just not hitting right now. And you know, Meadows had COVID at the beginning of the year, didn't have a great season, and then pulled an oblique and didn't get on the roster until the ALCS, I think. Diaz and Choi both just came off the IL for the postseason. They both had hamstring injuries the last 2 weeks. Like, Diaz, Choi, and Meadows are their three dudes for them, right? They're pretty important guys. And they're just not hitting well. The only guys hitting are Arozarena, who's actually not the last couple of games, Margot, and Kiermaier. And, you know, Joey Wendell's doing okay, but I don't know what else he can do. Like, Chris Singleton and I do the games together. We have a game every day. We text each other at the same time with what we think the Rays lineup is going to be. And you get a point for having a guy in there, a point for having him in the right spot in the order, and a point for having him right in the best right defensive position. And it's kind of fun because, of course, you never know what's going to happen. And my point is, every day it's different. And every day he's trying different things. And one day he'll say to us, you know, this guy's a good low ball hitter, so I'm going to give him a shot here. Or I like this guy's swings yesterday, so I'm going to give him a shot here. But at some point, it's, you know, as you know, Kevin, it's just up to the players to do better.
Dan and Chris Singleton and Jessica Mendoza will have the call of the game tonight on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, as the Rays attempt to even up this particular series. Dan, as you mentioned, you know, you've seen the Rays a lot. You've also called a lot of postseason baseball games. When Mookie Betts has that type of game in the first game of a series, don't you almost think that you're seeing the World Series MVP? It just felt that way yesterday. It really did.
Yeah. Yeah, you could. I mean, listen, Seager, Bellinger, like, they've got a lot of guys. But,
right.
You know, we were talking on the air last night, you know, I can't remember, but either Jess or Singer, we were talking about, like, is this the Dodgers' time? And I said, well, listen, they've been arguably, like, I know they haven't won the World Series, but they've been as good as any team in baseball the last 3-4 years. And then they added like the second best player in baseball to the team. You know, he's phenomenal. And we talked about it last night, you know, the phrase a five-tool player, which gets thrown around a little bit. And I don't know how many there really, really are in baseball. And Mike Trout, who may be the best player in baseball, is not a five-tool player because he does not have the arm to, in my opinion, he does not have an above-average arm.
Right.
Mookie Betts is hits for average, hits for power, has an incredible arm, is an incredible outfielder, and may have, you know, won the game with his legs last night. The double steal was really huge. It brings the infield in. He goes on contact on the ground ball to first, great head first slide, great jump. Scores an important run. He's a phenomenal player. You know, he's without question one of the two or three best players in the game. And he's that good of a guy and that good of a teammate and on and on and on. It was a heck of a trade for them. I mean, I know they gave up some stuff to get him, but they got an incredible player back. And he's made a huge difference for them.
How important do you think Cody Bellinger going forward, the mindset-wise? Yeah, tremendous talent. We see what he does at center field, the way he runs after balls. And, you know, it's effortless. He just runs back there and catches it and throws it in and laughs about it. Like, it's no big deal. But offensively, all the things that are going on, you can see him actually thinking about how to make an adjustment at the plate. Do you think he can continue to do this for the next however many games they're playing?
I think so. I mean, he was terrible the first month of the season, and for whatever reason, after winning the MVP, he apparently came in with a new swing this year, and they found his holes pretty quickly. But over the last month of the season, he hit almost 300, but he got off to such a bad start that the overall numbers aren't very good. And in the postseason, he's had his moments, and you guys remember how much he has struggled in the playoffs in the past. Like, and that had to be in his mind going into the playoffs. He's just so unbelievably talented. Like if we sit here and say, not who's the best player, you know, not Trout, Betts, but who's just the most talented player in baseball? He's in the conversation. Mm-hmm. You know, Trout's in the conversation. I think Tatis is in the conversation. Mm-hmm. Acuna's in the conversation. But Bellinger is in that conversation. He can play center field, right field, first base. He could obviously play left field if they ever put him out there. He could play all four of those at a very high level. He can run. And, you know, that swing, it's mesmerizing. I wouldn't teach it to my kid. But it's mesmerizing to watch the ferocity of it and the bat rap and all that. In terms of making adjustments, I think he can, but I think it's going to be a constant thing for him, Kevin. You know, if it looks to me, you know, as an amateur, it looks to me if you throw a ball, you know, at his knees or a little bit above, I mean, he's going to hit it 9 miles.
Yeah.
But you can see how with his bat path that, you know, he's susceptible up and in. Now you got to get it there. If you miss, he's going to pound it. But I think the key for him, and we saw it in the at-bat in Game 7 against Atlanta, he had three or four ugly-looking two-strike swings in that at-bat, but he fouled the ball off. He was willing to say, I can't do anything with this pitch. I'm just going to try to foul it somewhere, and I'll wait for him to make a mistake, and eventually Chris Martin made a mistake. Now, maybe I'm overselling the thought process there, but you know what I mean. And it goes back to Dante Bichette and two-strike approach, and sometimes you got to take a little bit of a loss in order to get a bigger win. And I think Cody Bellinger's figuring that out.
Rob Manfred did his, the commissioner usually does a sort of on-field news conference before the first game of the World Series. And it was interesting. I don't know how surprised you were, Dan. I was not surprised to hear him say that, you know, he is in favor of keeping the starting the extra innings with runners in second base, because I think a lot of us who are skeptics of that, at least I know Barker and myself both feel this way. I kind of like it. I didn't want to. I kind of like it. Now, whether we can have a discussion whether you want to do it in the 10th inning or maybe start in the 11th inning, I mean, I'm fine. I enjoyed the strategy of it. I was a little surprised to see him be so open about expanding playoffs. Like, not that it doesn't surprise me that he would see the financial gains here. But it's, you know, expanding playoffs for baseball people is a big issue, right? I mean, we get there. It's one of those things where it's like Democrats and Republicans postseason expansion. It really is right now. Are you surprised he's so open about it? Even though it looks like when he says expansion, he may not be talking about the same number of teams.
Yeah, I guess not really, because, you know, technically he works for the owners, and what are the owners interested in? Revenue.
Right.
Right. So not to be callous or anything, but as somebody once told me, if you can't figure out what the answer to a question is, chances are it's money. Like, why are they asking that question? And you don't know why. Chances are it's money. So listen, it created interest. Look what it did for the Blue Jays fan base this year, right? It, although the funny thing, I guess, was they'd have been, you know, right there into the final week of the season anyways. But it doesn't surprise me that he's going to say it. And maybe it's just something he'll use as a bargaining chip if the players want less. And, you know, I can see arguments on both sides. I think I'm in favor of more than five. I'm not sure I'm in favor of as many as eight.
Yeah.
Six feels like a good number to me, but... Mm-hmm. But the other thing I don't like is I don't like the disparity between the strengths of the divisions and the unbalanced schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's just me, you know, working in an Eastern division market, right? But the Yankees are always going to be the Yankees. The Red Sox will be back to being the Red Sox in a couple of years, and the Rays are the Rays are unbelievable. And if you're only going to have five teams get in, or six teams even, it's going to be really hard to do that in the East Division with an unbalanced schedule. So
yeah.
I'd like to them to consider all things, whether it's balancing the schedule, whether it's changing the divisions, whether it's blowing up the divisions. You know, mm-hmm. Who knows? I mean, anything could be on the table. In 10 years, maybe we'll be talking about American League and National League as things of the past. We have no idea. But
yeah.
I think more than five is good, but, you know, going to eight, I mean, the Astros were 29 and 31. The Brewers were 29 and 31. It's no different, really, than hockey or basketball. 500 gets you in the conversation in hockey and basketball, too, but it seems to me like it's a little bit much for baseball.
Yeah.
Good stuff, Danny. Thank you for doing this. Stay safe, and we look forward to your call tonight. Yeah. Thanks, as always.
Thanks a lot.
Okay. All right, guys, thanks. Have a good one.
Take care. It's the great Dan Shulman. He, Jessica Mendoza, and Chris Singleton will have the call of game two tonight. And look, I think I'm somebody. I remember when baseball brought out the wild card format in 1995 after the player strike, and I didn't like it. And it took me about a year to realize this is pretty interesting.
Yeah,
I'm with Dan. I have no problem expanding playoffs, but you've got to do something about the schedule. Now there's another year. You have another year in the current CBA, and if I'm the commissioner of baseball, my approach to the Players Association is, look, we don't know what next year, 2021, is going to look like yet. We don't know if we're going to have fans in the stands. We have no idea how things are going to look. Let's keep what we did this year. Let's carry it over. You know, obviously, if I'm not saying you just have play teams within your division, you could do whatever you want and try to have the semblance of a regular schedule. But when it comes to playoffs, let's kind of keep things where they are right now. And then when we sit down to discuss the next CBA, let's talk about firming it up a bit, because I think you do have to decide whether you're going to realign. I would like baseball to take advantage of this situation and figure out where your next expansion is going to be, how you're going to realign. I think Dan's right. I think 5 years down the road, maybe not even that, because the new CBA is going to be in a couple of years. I'll say 3 years down the road, baseball may look a lot different. Like, I can't see the DH going away now. I just can't see the DH going away in the National League. And
the three-batter rule thing, I don't really like that in the playoffs.
No, I'm with you. Three-batter rule, you can do away with that.
You might keep it in the regular season, but when the playoffs start.
I just don't.
You know what? Is it really saving you that much time?
Runner in second.
Blow of the game, maybe, I guess.
Runner in second base, I'm all in on. I really like that.
Even in the playoffs?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
I don't like that either.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
They like these teams. Yeah, again, it's about that seventh game of the World Series, and you're losing it
with
a guy starting at second base.
Well,
I'm not real sure that's
You know what, Bart,
a
though?
Good look it's, for
if you're gonna if you're gonna if you're gonna play it in the regular season, if those are the rules you're using in the regular season, why are you gonna change it for the playoffs?
That's the most important games of the year. That's why.
Maybe. Theoretically, at least. I have no problem with that. 590 is a text line. We'll get to it. There's a lot of texts. Some of you really do want Francisco Lindor, don't you? It's Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. All right, Mark Shapiro has just completed his conference call with reporters, his postseason conference call. We'll break it down and deal with it in the 3 o'clock hour. Doesn't like much was said, to be honest. No, I don't mean that pejoratively. It just looks like it was a regular postseason postseason conference call. He did not address his contractual issue.
How about Vladdy moving to third?
I'm just looking through things here. The Vancouver report that the Vancouver Canadiens will be an Oakland A's affiliate is not factual or accurate yet. There's no firm minor league plan for next year. Ownership support for pursuing free agents.
Oh, that's one person.
talking about, of course, the border issue. You know, I'll tell you this right now. The border issue will be resolved the second that there's a change in president of the United States. The second the United States sends signals to the rest of the world that it's got somebody who knows what they're doing running the ship, you'll see the Canadian-U.S. border open. And that's important to sports fans. That's important to sports fans in Canada, at least, because that will have an impact. Clearly, it's already had an impact on TFC. It will have an impact on whether or not the Blue Jays are going to be playing at home or not. So anyhow, we'll talk to Shai Davidi about that. He was on the conference call, or one of our guys who was on the conference call. Very nice. We'll talk to them and break it down. 590-590 is the text line. I mentioned a lot of people. Man, people are just absolutely. I mean, I get the impression a lot of them have already got their Francisco Lindor jerseys.
Can you blame them?
No.
Yeah, it's going to cost them, but that's what I said. I have no idea what's going on behind closed doors, but if you're really thinking about it and you're thinking about who would you get this year when you could hold off on that and throw it into the guy that's coming out next year.
Several people are pointing out, by the way, to your point.
Let's hear it.
That they play 3-on-3 hockey in the regular season overtime, and then when the playoffs come along, they go back to 5-on-5. Okay, so you know what? I don't want to get into an argument because I'm okay with it. It's not something that I feel.
Well, the thing at second base is they basically want to hurry up and get it over with.
Right. And I guess you could say that, do you want to hurry and get the World Series? So there you go.
You're not wrong. It's just. What I came
Mike
up
from
with
Colbert,
was
Dodgers 4 straight. You can't stop what's coming. Too much offense, too deep. Sorry, Jeff, your Rays are going down. When did they become my Rays?
Ever since you started tooting that horn for the last 5 years and saying Rays up and wearing a hat that's, you know, got Rays on it. And
we talked to both Carlos.
Go, Rays, go.
Stop it, Dan, about this. This is from Brennan Hamilton.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a dumb question. There's no such thing as a dumb question,
no.
Bryn. This is sports talk radio. Yeah. Trust me. There's no such thing as a dumb question. Is hitting Renfroe behind a Rosarena hurting a Rosarena because they don't have to pitch to him? Now, this is kind of what we talked about. Kevin, let's talk about a Rosarena and Brandon Lowe, because you made an interesting point about a guy scuffling hitting high in the order. So let's talk first. Now, there's nobody else hitting.
I could say this. If they were facing Garrett Cole and you could put G-Man Choi behind him,
right,
then maybe you're talking. But everybody else listened. Who else would scare you besides Randy on that team? Nobody.
There's nobody.
So you're going to pitch to him the way you think you can get him out. Yeah. If that's spinning it, if that's, you know, crowding him, if that's moving his feet, however it is.
Like, there's really nobody else.
There's nobody.
There's nobody else hot enough you could put in front of or behind him.
It's like Brandon Lowe. Moving him down. I was thinking about this last night when I was watching him hit. And if you're Kevin Cash, moving him down in the order, is that really going to help him? I think where they're putting him, they're trying to get him more strikes. I think that's the biggest deal, is not getting better pitches to hit, getting more strikes, some pitch that he can drive somewhere on the field and get some confidence. I don't really think it's mechanical. I think it's what he's swinging at. I really do. Mechanics all of a sudden aren't going to fall off the map. I think that Garrett Cole figured out something that's his weakness, which is in and which is up, and they're attacking that more now than they ever have because they can't. I think that's what they're doing. It has nothing to do with his mechanics, and he keeps continually swinging at it. Moving him down to, say, the seventh spot, is that going to hide him? Nope. So I think if you have to play him and he's one of your guys, you keep putting him in the same spot and hopefully praying every day that you go home that when you're writing his name in that lineup, maybe he'll get one out away from him and he'll run into one with a guy standing on first base.
Yeah. No, it's I don't know. Like, I don't know what you do if you're Kevin Cash. You know what? I mean, just look at when the Rays are good against the Blue Jays, who are the guys that are doing the damage? Who's, over the past two or three years, it's been Brandon Lau and Austin Meadows that have been doing the damage.
Yeah, Kiermaier you can throw in there a little bit because his speed.
Austin Meadows.
Willie Adames does.
That situation to me right now is maybe even more important. Maybe even more important than Brandon Lau is just Austin Meadows not hitting and looking lost. Like, you know, we had Orestes Destrada on talking about he looks like a guy who's been hurt a lot of the year and isn't ready to play. And Austin Meadows' bat, if he's healthy, that makes a difference to this.
G-Man Choi's going to help. Righty throwing. Listen, I'd write his name in the lineup, not take it out. That's just me.
Absolutely. I saw that. Now, I'm not going to blame Yandy Diaz for eight runs, but I don't know. G-Man Choi maybe makes that throw to the plate to get Mookie Betts because that throw was wide.
You could argue that. And that out with might have.
I'm just saying. I think
it wouldn't have hurt.
If I'm not,
to you that way.
Yeah, if I'm not getting the offense, then I'm going to maximize my defense. Right. If I've got a choice
ask you a
between
question. Who do you think in a big spot with a runner on second base with two outs
G-Man
would you
Troy.
Rather have up? Then you just answered your question.
G-Man Troy.
I think this time of the year, that platoon thing, the Dodgers have tried this stuff forever, the platoon thing, and now the Rays are trying it. Does it work? No. You want to know why? Because all these dudes throw 1,000 miles an hour with yakkers. If you don't play every day and get timing, Carlos Payne just came on and said, timing, 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 and more timing.
Yeah.
And if you don't play every day trying to hit that stuff, it's off one, on one, off one, on one. Good luck. Yeah. Write the names in the lineup, the first five or six guys. Go with those first five or six, and then, you know, you can pencil in and out the other three.
Got to talk about this. We got a minute left. We're watching a replay of the game. Josh Fleming pitched last night. If you're Kevin Cash, what is Josh Fleming right now to you?
What he was last night.
All right.
I got my guys.
Okay.
There's a reason why he didn't use his guys. We don't know what that is.
All right. I just wondered because, you know, his name came up.
You know,
a guy who might even start along with the Arbor.
You know his guys.
Okay.
Blake Snell ain't going nine innings.
All right.
You're seeing him tonight, Jeff. It's must win, buddy.
It's Charlie, mate. Isn't it Charlie tonight?
No.
It's Blake tonight? Whatever. Doesn't matter. Rays are going to win.
6-3. Well, they better.
6-3.
They better.
Count
you get
on
them
it.
Brooms.
Writer's block is next. Go away, Barker.